This is Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast, Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. My name is Randy Cantrell. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. This is episode 5047. It takes a lifetime to have old friends. How about we have a race to see who comes in last? We were little boys, Stanley and me. Best friends from our beginnings. A quote-unquote Halloween costume party. All the friends of our folks were there, dressed in garb, were hiding one's real identity. That was the goal. That was the objective of the whole affair. We were gathering inside the garage, sitting in a circle with folks mingling, watching all these new arrivals as they would come up the driveway. And up the driveway, walking like Frankenstein, was a gray robot. A red light bulb for a nose, illuminated. This is the early 1960s, kids. There was no way to know who was underneath that garb of spray-painted cardboard boxes forming this ultra-low-tech robot. I had already identified my grandmother. Her name was Marie. She was dressed like Peter Pan. Well, I recognized her immediately. Walked right up to her, called her by name, Ree. Ree is what everybody, including me, called her, short for Marie. And, of course, I asked her to pick me up, and she did. Nobody else could identify her. Nobody else knew who she was, but she was my grandmother. So, yeah, not a big challenge for me. Then there was this robot creature who easily was the most captivating character that I remember being there. We were fascinated. It was Stanley's dad, Johnny Elmore. That's my first memory of Johnny Elmore. I don't know why that memory, although you can kind of figure it out being a little kid and a robot. I mean, come on, this is in the early 1960s. Of course it was a fascinating thing. It might not be that fascinating today. We got robots all over the place. I was very young. Stanley was very young. Preschool. Johnny was my best friend's dad. I mean, that was my context for who this man was. There was never a time when he wasn't in my life. His family was, they were my second family. It's just how it always was. Even when Stanley, his son, and my best friend passed from this life, it was still that way. Losing Stanley was the most devastating loss for me because we had so much history together. And because, we were both older. 56, to be precise, when Stanley died. Losing grandparents, especially Peter Pan, Ree, was sad, very sad. But she had been suffering badly. She was relegated to a nursing facility because of the constant care that she required. Losing Stan was different. Losing Stanley was different because he was a peer. He was a close friend. He was a trusted phone call away all the time. I was a trusted phone call away all the time until he wasn't. Johnny Elmore and his wife Sally, who preceded him in death, were close friends with my parents. My life began in a small Oklahoma town, Ada, where Johnny was the evangelist, the preacher, working with the congregation where we all worshiped. They were a family of four. They would soon become a family of five. We were a family of four. There's a photograph. I've posted this before, but I'm going to post it again. Just go to leaningtowardwisdom.com and find the episode 5047, and you will see a picture of me, My sister, who was the oldest, clearly, of us all, Joni, a couple of years older than me and Stanley, and then, of course, Stan. This is circa 1960 or so, and this would have been about the same time that, well, that the robot appeared in our life. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "It is one of the blessings of old friends that you can afford to be stupid with them." It's true. It's true of close friends, too. Close family friends. We've been plenty stupid around each other through the years. Boy, Stanley and I were super stupid around each other. It was the fun of it. I mean, I have contributed far more than my fair share of stupidity when it comes to being stupid around old friends. My heart was broken when Stanley died. I was sad for a very, very long time. I'm still sad about it. I was sad for my own loss, but I was especially sad for Stanley's folks, for his parents. Because, you know, as a dad myself, my imagination kicked into full gear trying to understand what it must feel like to bury a child, albeit a child in his 50s. And as a dad myself, I was especially sensitive to Johnny's emotions at that time. I remember I'd go into the funeral home, the same funeral home that we just went to this past weekend when we buried Johnny. I entered that funeral home. I hugged Johnny, and I remember him whispering in my ear something about he had been thinking about me and Stanley jumping on the bed as little boys. I mean, here we were, two old men now, and memories of long, long ago, those were at the forefront of our mind. Memories of kids acting stupid, right? Close friends acting stupid, but acting stupid together. And that still is, quite frankly, I confess, that is still mostly what I miss. I miss that because of Stanley's absence. And it's among the many things that I'm going to miss most about Johnny as well. All the snarkiness, all the sarcasm, all the bagging on each other. You know, the stuff that's just been part of my existence. Well, since I was that little boy in that dark suit that you can see if you go over to the website and look at it. And frankly, before, a man named Robert Brault, I guess that's how he's pronouncing it. I love the quote. I don't have a clue who he is. "Say what you want about aging, it's still the only way to have old friends." Boy, isn't that true. Say what you want about aging, it's still the only way to have old friends. Regularly, Johnny would tell me, getting old isn't what it's cracked up to be. Sometimes I'd say, well, it beats the alternative, and he would very quickly reply, "I'm not sure about that." Age does that, especially when age brings infirmities, and Johnny had his infirmities. Most recently, ongoing losses of balance and eyesight. The eyesight loss was especially vexing because Johnny Elmore was a reader, a studier, a lifelong learner. Glaucoma and a detached retina. Surgery had been performed to fix the detached retina, and there was hope that the doctors would be able to restore his eyesight. Once that surgery was kind of recovered, then he could have the surgery for the glaucoma, at least hopefully enough so that he could at least get about and read. But repeated falls contributed to cutting that opportunity short. Months ago, when I heard about his eyesight, I remarked to my wife, and she's also been close to the family since she was a teen, and I remember telling her, you know, if Johnny Elmore can't read, he's done. He's done. That's how important learning was to him, studying, reading. Well, mere days before his death, he turned 88 years old, the same age as my mother. My father is 96, and they were close. They would talk on the phone very frequently, weekly. Old friends, staying in touch, keeping the connections alive. In the past 2 years, I have endured some personal challenges of my own, where I have relied quite heavily on Johnny. Frankly, I'd confess probably more heavily on him in the last couple of years than I ever have before. And that's saying something, because I've relied on him plenty, especially anything to do with faith. I was 11 years old in the summer of 1968 when I asked Johnny to baptize me for the forgiveness of my sins. And he has always been a prominent advisor for me in spiritual matters. And it goes back that far. Well, it goes back further. He's always been prominent, a rock-solid Bible student that I knew I could approach with any issue, any question, and he would help walk me through it. In the last 2 years, I needed him more than I ever needed him, and he was there. He was there for me, questioning me, advising me, guiding me through the challenges and the scriptures. Who you surround yourself with matters. The older I grow, the truer I know that to be. It's largely why, at this stage of my life, I am all in on helping people leverage the power of others. Johnny Elmore was part of my secret power of others. He was 88 years old. Another is 83 years old, and another was 75 years old. Three wise old men. They weren't always old. Well, because I wasn't always old. All of them preachers, ironically enough. All of them men I'd known all my life. Johnny was the oldest at 88. But the youngest, yeah, unfortunately, the youngest would be the first to go. We didn't expect it. Russell Barney Owens Jr. Barney passed away in February this year. I'm going to put his obituary in a photograph of him on the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, episode 5047. First Barney, now Johnny, two very special advisors who have helped me more times. Well, there's just no way to count. Largely because we shared faith, but also because, well, they've known me forever. Johnny Elmore had just turned 88. Ronnie Wade, Ronnie's 83. Barney Owens, well, he was on his way toward 76. He didn't quite make it. Three men who always understood my context. Three old men who knew me well. Three old men whom I knew well. I trusted them. They cared about me. I cared about them too. I'll put a photograph of Johnny and Ronnie. These are two buddies. These are two guys that started their career preaching as just, well, they would tell you, boys. They were teenagers. One remains, Ronnie Wade. His health is failing. For 7 years now, he has been quite successfully battling a blood cancer, but 2019 has not been kind to these three men in my life. It's taken two of them, and it's threatening to take Ronnie. They were close friends. They were co-workers in the faith, all of them. For me, trusted advisors who I've always known had my very best interest at heart. You know, the kind of guys that just, they have your back. And truth tellers, which was infinitely important to me, men who would caringly challenge me. Some weeks ago, I made a trip to spend a few days with Ronnie and his wife, Alfreda. And he and Johnny have been buddies since they were kids. And Ronnie never expected to be preceded in death by his lifelong friend. But that five-year gap between Ronnie being 83 and Johnny being 88, that five-year gap in their ages, it grew increasingly large, especially over the last few years. Well, one afternoon, I called Johnny while I'm at Ronnie's house, and they're some hours away in a drive. And after telling Johnny where I was, I'm here at Ronnie's house, and here, I'm going to let you talk to him. So I hand the phone over to Ronnie so these two old buddies can talk. And Ronnie was relegated to an easy chair. Miles away, There, Johnny was relegated to a bedroom, not able to see clearly enough to venture too far away. And as Ronnie took my iPhone, he immediately said to his buddy, his lifelong friend, "How about we have a race to see who comes in last?" And they chuckled together. I was reminded in that instance, Dr. Seuss said it better than I ever could. "Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened." Yeah, you know, I agree with that, and it's great, and I think it's super wise. It's hard. It's really hard. You need some time, right? You need some perspective before the smile can kind of resurrect itself. Johnny died in his sleep a week ago. Ronnie was asked to preach his funeral, to which he, of course, quickly agreed. But he woke up the next morning after he had agreed, and his health had taken a turn. Doctors advised him, "You don't need to travel." And I felt very badly for him because I knew how badly he would have liked to have honored what he promised his old friend. These are two guys who promised each other, whoever's remaining, preach the funeral for the other guy. Yeah, but these are the curveballs, right? These are the curveballs that life throws at us. We're all crying and sometimes smiling. And in time, I suspect the smiles are going to outweigh the tears. At least that's how it often goes when I think of Stanley, my lifelong friend. I still cry, but I smile a lot more than I did when his death first hit me. These are old friends, and these old friends are, well, they're different to me because these old friends, they're not peers. These are not my peers. They were and they are my heroes, and they have been the adults during my teen years. They have been the mature adults during my early adult years, and they've been the old men during my mature years. Three old men who were all just a few steps further up the trail than me. Age isn't merely a number. It's a condition, and it's filled with hardships and the weight that years of experience put on a body of bones and a heart. And I've seen it. I've seen it in each one of them. I see it in myself because life takes a toll. Life takes a toll on all of us. Over the past decade, I've leaned more heavily on each of these men than I had before. And I guess that just really illustrates that life's issues, they just grow more pressing. At least they have on me. And it did on them too. Simplicity gave way to complexity. You know, you think when you're young and the kids are little and, man, there's just a lot of moving parts, and there are. You think, you know, it's all going to settle down and it's all going to get more simple. And in some ways, I suppose it does, but boy, in other ways, it just gets way more complicated. More moving parts produced by more people involved in our lives as we are all growing older. More folks to consider. And more folks to consider means more problems to consider and more burdens to weigh us down, more to think about, more to get preoccupied about. And then there's the weight of responsibility, that burden of leadership, not some formalized thing, not some hierarchical thing, but the influence that one wields in becoming old enough to warrant the respect of others. The leadership of influence, the leadership of service. I mean, it can bow a body low. Isaiah 35:3, "Strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees." The battle was raging. As long as Moses had his hands lifted in the air, the battle would belong to him and God's people, but Moses was not able to do this alone. The record says in Exodus chapter 17, verses 11 through 14, "And it came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, the one on one side, the one on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. We all need some help to steady our hands until the going down of the sun. Moses had two men, one on each side, helping him. During my lifetime, I've had a few select, special men of great wisdom and great faith who have helped steady my hands and helped direct my course toward greater wisdom. They've warned me of road hazards, helping me avoid untold calamities. They've cheered me on. They have encouraged me to keep the faith and continue the battle, even though, in my estimation at the time, defeat just seemed quite certain in my eyes. They've questioned, they've challenged, they've pushed, they've cajoled, they've supported me in ways that only old men can with a younger, albeit still, old man. In the last 5 years or so, I've grown increasingly interested and convinced of the high value found in our intentional associations, specifically in how we leverage the power of other people in our lives. It has made me more closely examine the people who have been my closest and most trusted advisors. There's a theme in my life, and I would imagine there's a theme in your life as well. Think about the people who occupy your most inner circle. Your most inner circle. All of mine are gospel preachers. They always have been. There aren't any exceptions. I've had other close friends, but not as close as these men. My current circle includes men as young as their mid-40s and now as old as 83. Yeah, I'm having to go younger, and I'm having to go younger because, well, my oldest mentors and advisors are passing away. And typically, I will tell you that I have relied on men 15 to 20 years my senior. I don't think it was strategic as much as it was conveniently generational. I would love to tell you that I was smart enough, wise enough for it to be strategic. I'm not sure that I was. Well, I can tell you I wasn't. And by conveniently generational, here's what I mean. My father is 34 years older than me. Many of my inner circle old friends, they have been in my life as long as I can remember because, well, they entered my life largely through my parents. So I think in my case, that explains this age difference. And boy, did it work to my advantage. An enormous advantage. Today, I find myself attempting, well, likely without much success, to provide similar support, similar insight to men 15 to 20 years my junior. I'm hoping to keep the cycle of support, the cycle of encouragement, the cycle of leadership alive. Now, time's going to tell whether I can succeed at this or not. I figure the next 15 plus years are going to make or break my legacy. I know that's a lot of pressure, but come on, it's what it is. And I don't think that's unique to me. I think it's unique to all older men and all older women. We enter this phase of life where our perspective is more settled. You know, the priorities seem clearer. And quite frankly, so do the ambitions. And as I've grown older, my resolve has intensified. The resolve to make a bigger difference, whatever it takes, even if it takes a lifetime. Jason Isbell, he's among my favorite singer-songwriters. In 2015, I'm going to embed the YouTube of this song. In 2015, he released an album that was entitled Something More Than Free, and one of my favorite songs on that record is If It Takes a Lifetime. If It Takes a Lifetime. And the final refrain of that song is, our day will come if it takes a lifetime. And I'm here to tell you, it does take a lifetime. It takes a lifetime to have old friends. It takes a lifetime to gain the wisdom that old friends can provide. lots of things that are great value take a lifetime. Now, lifetimes are relative. Barney's lifetime was 75 years. Johnny Elmore's was 88. And so far, Ronnie's is 83. These three different men from three different places in the country, all sharing a faith, all of them precious to me, and all of them instrumental in my decisions, in my development, and my wisdom. Here's the thing. The lifetime isn't measured in years. It's measured in value. And the value isn't a competition. In fact, there's no way to compare the value that these three men provided my life. There's no way to pit them against one another in terms of, well, okay, Johnny gave me more value. No, I can't do that because each of them were different. They each contributed in a unique way. And I needed that. I needed what each one of them brought. Barney was the first to go. Barney left us in the spring of this year, but nobody challenged me quite like he did. Notorious. Barney was notorious for not ever telling me what to do. He would pose a powerful statement followed by a question. It was pretty much the norm for him as far back as I can remember. It's the single most popular phrasing that I would hear from him when we were involved in a deep, serious conversation. He would say, "Well, you could do that. I'm not sure it'd be right. Are you sure?" And by right, he always meant scriptural. In other words, would it be in keeping with God's word? Would it be what God would want based on what the Bible says? And most often the reply that he would hear back would be, "Of course I'm not sure. That's why I'm talking to you." And we'd chuckle. Nobody was like Barney in my life. Nobody. But nobody was like Johnny either. And nobody's like Ronnie either. Johnny didn't challenge me the way that Barney did. It was different because he had his own style. And Ronnie, well, he's still different yet. And admittedly, I am closest to him than any other old man. And it indeed has taken a lifetime. His personality is measured. His tone is always tempered. But I got to thinking as I was considering today's show and what I wanted to say, and it was obviously sparked by the death of Johnny, which was just a week ago, Sunday. Humor. Faith was the common bond, but humor was another common bond. Each of these men, funny in their own way. And I appreciated their sense of humor, and it made the connection deeper. Now, Barney was a man with a dry wit. I mean, just out of nowhere would come a quip that you didn't see coming, and it would almost always just lay me low with laughter. One of my favorite stories of him, and the one that I've likely told you before, was about his childhood. Barney lived in Cincinnati, Ohio. He was from Kentucky, and as a kid, the family, well, they moved from the hills of Kentucky to the big city for work. They were poor as Job's turkey. Well, we were having a breakfast some years ago, and my son Ryan, an adult and a father of his own, and a couple of other fellas that I had invited, younger guys, to come and have breakfast with us, and Barney was telling stories, and everybody was quite entertained. And Ryan, my son, asked him about his family and that move to Cincinnati. And he asked, "Well, you know, did you ever go back to Kentucky to visit?" And without blinking an eye, without even hardly barely taking a breath, Barney said, "Sure, we'd take a bus back there and with a sack of sandwiches and show off." And the whole table just erupted. I mean, the mere thought of some transplanted hillbillies from Kentucky returning home from Cincinnati on a Greyhound bus with a sack of sandwiches to show off, I mean, it just immediately struck us all as really funny, as Barney intended it to. And it was funny. I think about him often. I think about him very often. Yeah, especially, I tell you when I think about him, really, I think about him all the time, but I think about him especially anytime Briscoe Darlin appears on an old Andy Griffith rerun. If you don't know, just Google Briscoe Darlin. I mean, Barney's demeanor, Barney Owens, not Barney Fife, Barney Owens' demeanor was dry as Briscoe Darlin. Now, he was sharp, he was smart, he was well-read. The man was always reading a book, and usually it was a book of some debate over some Bible topic that had happened years and years ago. The man knew the Bible. The man knew the Bible as well as any man I've ever known, and he was an accomplished preacher who could take a complex topic and make it appear simple. And I miss him. I miss him dearly. I miss being able to make that phone call, I got to tell you, and ask him questions and seek his advice. And I catch myself sometimes trying to figure out what question Barney May would ask. I'm not going to tell you that I can. I'm not going to tell you I've got it figured out because, well, I don't know that I can. But I miss him. He had insights and viewpoints that I likely won't ever be able to replace, but I had him in my inner circle for a while, for a very long while, and I'm very, very thankful for our years together. Johnny Elmore's sense of humor was without parallel in my life. I mean, I was so close to this family. We shared a snarkiness, we shared a sarcasm that just made our ability to get it unrivaled. I mean, we could finish each other's sentences. It was that kind of a thing. Now, like Barney, Johnny's humor could often be subtle, but he wasn't nearly as dry as Barney. Johnny was frequently just more matter of fact about it. Of the three men, Johnny was the man with whom I was close enough to see emotional frustrations that would often morph into something that would just be, well, just hysterical. I mean, when you spend a lifetime... And you spend a lifetime and you're so close that you can be stupid with each other. There are just too many stories like that that fill my memory banks. Johnny could get a quick look of utter frustration and contempt for the situation. And it just always cracked us up, me and Stanley both. I mean, since I was small, I always found Johnny Elmore's angst funny. I mean, Stanley and I both did. Well, until we were probably threatened with a belt, and okay, well, then it wasn't quite so funny. We had gone to some inexpensive steakhouse. You know, it's the kind that you find in any small town, especially in Oklahoma or Texas. I think Western Sizzler. You go through the line, you place your order, you get your drink, and you're given a number or something, and then you go find your table, and you're listening for your order. This is it. Back when you're waiting for the PA to announce your order, right? So you're listening to this voice over the PA. And on this particular occasion, the PA, I mean, it was so garbled, so muffled, you could not understand. I mean, it sounded,
all you could hear is just, it sounded like this.
You had no idea what the guy was saying. It sounded like the guy had his fingers on his nose and his hands cupped over his mouth. You could barely understand anything coming out of this speaker. And it was just, there was something coming over the speaker just rather constantly. Well, we'd been waiting for the food, and after a little bit, you know, Johnny just got that look that he could have, that wrinkled brow and that stern look and that look of just utter exasperation. Bet you can tell what he's saying. My lands, there's no way to tell if he's announcing our food or not. You know, just so dramatic. I'm not sure we were even paying attention until he said something. And immediately, I got tickled, busted out laughing. Most of us did. Because it just, you know, it sounded like the guy.
That's what it sounded like, just this right here.
Leave it to Johnny, you know, to pick up on it and be just completely flabbergasted by it and exasperated by it. There were millions of moments like that. I mean, there are literally millions of moments like that you have over the course of a lifetime with a friend. And I loved him for it because those little everyday frustrations were easily pointed out by him. All right. I mean, well, come on, you know, when you're that easily annoyed, it's funny. It's funny. And he did it with such flair. My family rolls very much the same way, by the way. And it provides daily humor. Takes a lifetime. Well, it takes a lifetime to fully appreciate it, I guess. There's nothing like old friendships. People have known us for a long, long time. People who understand our context in a way that, well, nobody else really can because nobody else has that history. One that's too frequently overlooked. Somebody says something that hits us wrong or not quite right. And rather than think deeply about this person's historical intentions, which are mostly good toward us, we suddenly have this knee-jerk reaction to what they said without any regard to their long-proven intent. With these three men, I've never questioned their intentions, especially as it relates to their relationship with me. I've always known their intentions were the best. The best. Giving them due consideration, therefore, was never hard for me. It's not hard for me with Ronnie. Behaving with grace and respect toward them, well, that wasn't hard either. I mean, even if I didn't agree with them, and I didn't always, there's something else. There's just something else when you've had three old men surround you your entire life. You don't benefit from your own lifetime. You benefit from each of theirs, too. The cumulative impact, the compounding effect, if you please, of wisdom is priceless in making it all the more urgent that we keep passing it on. We buried Johnny just yesterday. As I hit the record button, today is Sunday, December the 8th, 2019. We buried Johnny in the city of Ardmore, Oklahoma on December the 7th, Saturday, 2019. He was 88 years old. It was a great service. And at the helm, officiating, was another getting older, but he's not old. Another evangelist, another member of my inner circle. His name is Kevin Presley. Your best bet to find anything about Kevin Presley is to visit the website letthebiblespeak.tv. Letthebiblespeak.tv, and you will see and hear sermons from Kevin Presley, an evangelist living in Dothan, Alabama. Kevin and his wife, Bethany, came and Kevin officiated the service. We were able to spend a day or so together with Kevin and Bethany. And I told you I was going younger at that position. Well, Kevin's one of the younger ones in that position. I'm still leaning toward wisdom. I'm just having to do it with some younger men because as I grow older, that's just the way it rolls. I hope you're being very intentional about who you associate with. I hope you're being very, very, very wise in associating with people who can help make you better. And that doesn't mean they always tell you what you want to hear. But it means they care enough about you, they love you enough, they want you to fix what ails you, and they want you to lean more toward wisdom and away from foolishness, most often your own. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. My name is Randy Cantrell. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.